How are you guys? It's been a while. Probably, I think, I have to check. I think it's been a year and a half since our last podcast.
Been a long time. I now see why it's been a long time.
Yeah, me too.
Hey, guys, it's been a long time.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, how have you been? I do like that Ralph is now rocking the Jeffrey Dahmer glasses.
Yeah.
I know. I've never seen the it's a documentary or a series, I don't know what. A
series based on the serial killer Jeffrey Dahmer.
I haven't seen it.
Very disturbing.
Yeah, I bought the glasses and somebody said to me, "You look like Jeffrey Dahmer." And I was like, okie dokie. But I didn't know who it was.
Isn't that like the serial killer guy?
Yeah, apparently. Yeah.
I don't know what he's famous for, but I think it's...
Eating his victims and... Having them dismembered in his apartment with the neighbors complaining about smell and like the police like doesn't really do anything and he can just
so
continue
he's
killing.
Vegetarian. He's not woke.
Not woke. Not vegan.
He's not he's not vegan at all.
And that's the glasses he wore as well.
It's like the classic serial killer glasses, man.
Hmm. Ralph could be a serial killer.
They are, I think they're kind of considered back in style a little bit.
Who has seen Dexter?
I haven't.
Haven't? Oh, shit.
No.
It's amazing.
I like
it.
It was actually funny.
I've seen Dextro when I eat sugar.
Sugar rush.
I do the sample you prepared because this was a moment.
Also, only Dutch people know Dexto.
Yeah, is it? I think it's an international brand.
Well, if you have diabetes like me, you probably know Dexto because you keep it on you so that you can eat sugar when your blood sugar dips.
Okay.
Hey, when your blood sugar dips, I shit you not. This is my sugar alarm.
Well, and take the Dextro.
No, I just eat that cookie, but maybe I need to go get another one.
But you have
a big deal. It just you set your alarm so that like you see your sugar is going down, so you need to eat a bit more.
But you have like the sensor in your arm, right? Like a thing that measures
Look,
it.
If you're on the camera viewing, you can see here.
My red is never
Ooh.
Good.
3.7. So it's funny, but I find another cookie and I eat it.
So you have a legal reason to eat cookies.
Yeah, and his accent turns quite like Arnold Schwarzenegger German when he needs some sugar, I guess.
I turn into the Hulk.
Oh. Hangry Hulk.
But now we eat a Trek cookie. We're not sponsored yet, but we're trying to get sponsors for this podcast.
Trek protein.
So we can actually get paid to talk all this crap.
Because we work out a lot, we need protein.
I actually do work out a lot.
Yeah, me too. Ralph as well.
Hey, I was went this morning to the gym.
Why do you laugh? Come on, man.
Yeah, I went at 8.
I just, I see, I'm not sure. Did you post them yourself, the videos of you in the gym? Bicep Ralph?
I repost them, yeah.
Oh, you repost them.
Operation Kashi.
Operation Kashi.
Yeah.
Operation IKEA Pax.
Yeah. Method. Appa.
How is it going so far?
It's actually going quite well. I try to go like 3 times a week.
Do you have like a goal in mind or is something you're working towards?
Gosh, becoming a big closet.
Yeah, like six pack, triceps, biceps.
Big closet.
You know what's up? Hey.
Well, let's do the flex then. I was in the gym at 6 a.m. this morning.
Good for you.
My gym wasn't open then even.
No.
So I wasn't at the gym at 6. I was in my bed at 6.
Were you at... Were you
since
in the
when
gym
is
at
it
6?
A flex to be really early?
It's the 5 a.m. club.
Since I have a kid, it's just I am up at 6 anyway.
It's also the thing with the miracle morning.
Exactly. Miracle morning, 5 a.m. club.
Oh, is that a thing?
It's a thing.
Yeah, I hate that kind of shit.
Well, I'm up since I have a kid at 6 anyways because she sleeps till 6. She sleeps okay. very good through the night.
And then you go to the gym. Sick. Don't take care of the kid.
No, I don't go to the gym every day. But I mean, I don't find it a trouble waking up that early anymore.
What's the count on the kids since last time we spoke? I think we upped three kids ever since then.
Actually, yeah. Wow. One up Crazy. Each.
One up each, exactly.
We're like the Daddy DJ Club.
Well,
the
I'm
disturbed
not DJ.
Daddy DJ like Club. The
millennials that also want a podcast club.
Exactly. Yeah. Broadcast our opinions.
Yeah, we have a very interesting opinion.
I'll just put it in there.
But the thing is, if you talk a long enough shit, if you do that for long enough, you actually end up in like interesting discussions.
Yeah, we had a good talk last week.
Yeah, but we didn't record it, unfortunately.
No, it was in Dutch as well.
It was very interesting. And also, I bought that book. Maybe they want to sponsor us. It's called Joey Knows, I think.
Was it the Life Lessons one?
Yeah, Everything I Wish I Knew or something.
Life Advice.
Oh, yeah. I actually thought the book was called Joey Knows. I was like, oh, that's
Joey. No, that's upcoming. That's upcoming. Title.
Oh, but it's interesting because it has only quotes in it.
It's this one. And
so you can just pick it up and randomly start. And
excellent life advice. Yeah. Excellent advice for living.
Okay.
So something for you, Ralph, from the toilet.
The way you were reading it off the screen was really funny. But Sorry? It has a lot of quotes in it by some old dude who wanted to give some advice to his kids. But
did you just call Kevin Kelly some old dude?
He started writing it when he was 68.
Yeah, but he's a pretty big guy, as in he's not just a random dude.
Everybody's a random dude.
True.
Which is what I loved when I saw people protesting the King, King Charles. They had like protest signs up and it said, he's just some dude. And I thought it was amazing because he actually is.
Really. Yeah. Yeah, it is. If you think about it, like, but it's also connected to the sentence, like, nobody knows what the fuck they're doing.
Yeah.
Same thing with a king, you know, it's just a guy who's doing something which he thinks is best.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't trade with him.
No, me neither.
No, same.
So I'm glad he does it. But it's kind of entertaining as well. It's entertainment business. The same as we do, actually.
Yeah, but they're kind of forced into it. You know, they're like, you're born. No,
they have a choice.
You have to do this.
That's the nice thing of our society. We always have a choice.
It's true, but it's very difficult if you're in that position to then take that step of like, I'm not doing anything related to the...
Well, you can see it now.
Nobody claimed life wouldn't be a rocky road there, dude.
You can see it now with Prince... what's his name? Prince William? No? The guy who left with Rachel?
Harry or William?
Harry.
One of the two.
Yeah. Harry. Yeah, with Rachel from Suits.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Who has also a normal name, but we don't know it.
Yeah, no one knows. It's just Rachel.
Where they film themselves in a taxi that they're being followed by paparazzi.
Uh-huh.
And it's just the whole irony of that. I don't know if you saw their documentary.
No.
Basically, they complain about how much they're followed about the paparazzi. So they're like, we have no privacy. That's already ironic because they're presenting that to the whole world on Netflix. But also, there's a lot of footage in it from paparazzi, which they, of course, had to buy. So then that's very almost hypocrite that you then... Oh, we hate the paparazzi, but we still pay them for their footage so we can show how much we are followed. It's
yeah,
always
you're really keeping the earnings model of the paparazzi in float that way.
Yeah, exactly.
And what's the documentary about? About their life stories or
about how Meghan grew up?
Meghan Markle.
And then it's like. Eminem. About how they have such a difficult life because they're always followed and everybody has an opinion about them.
I'm really interested in, Jopke, and it's also how we get to know you better. What prompted you to press play for that documentary?
Boredom?
Yeah?
No, curiosity. I was curious. I had my thoughts that it would be like one of those, We have it so bad documentary, look at our poor life. And I kind of wanted to see if that was actually the thing and that I could hate on it. because I like that sometimes, just hate on stuff. And I actually, that was actually true. So I didn't finish watching everything, but it's just very, yeah. I know this is too easy to say, but it's like, oh, rich people have so
problems
many
problems too.
Well, problems, no, like more like don't, yeah, I don't know.
Is it rich people or is it famous people?
Rich, mostly very rich. They like, because they never had any concerns that they would ever have food or clothes. Mm. Or there's always some kind of, you have
to
always keep that in the back of your mind.
Yeah, that's what Ralph says. Maslow pyramid.
Yeah. So that's always what you, yes, you can
Joey, because Joey can explain it really well.
The Maslow pyramid. Where the
it's in Egypt.
I had this in school, but like you need the first layer to then go to the second layer. So the first layer is like your basic needs, like you need food, you need shelter. Then you go to the second one, which, and there's, it goes up until like, I don't know,
I
acceptance
five or six.
I don't know either.
But I've got
it. We have a seventh now since we have Gen Z.
Maybe. He has it.
There you go.
Five layers. And creativity is in the top layer.
Comes last.
Everything in your life needs to be okay in order to be super creative.
I don't have any complaints, to be honest.
But
I
hate
it when I see people complain online or whatever. I do complain
sometimes.
Yeah,
that's what I had with that documentary as well. I was like, why are they so complainy and so openly while they want privacy? If you really want privacy and you have that kind of money, you can get privacy.
Oh, yeah. But the thing is, it's not complaining. It's also their business model. It's just getting attention.
Yeah.
And I don't take it serious at all. Also, what I really dislike about documentaries, especially about persons, and all, you also need to consider who's the producer of it. But it's also more like this, oh, look at me, and somebody can present themselves. And I know for a fact, some people, of some documentaries, they're full of shit. It's like the whole history is turned around. And you have sometimes also in movies or whatever, like, I make the history, you know, somebody says, it's really true. History is not true all of the time, especially about persons and famous persons or whatever. And I also, in Holland, we have Videoland.
Man. I was just going to say, there is one documentary that actually does inspire, and it's so like such a true story, and it's about André Hazes and his downfall.
Like Unio. I've seen that.
That's one of the, I started watching that documentary because I wanted to laugh, like, but it's actually so bad. I couldn't watch. And it's, I think the real problem with it is, people involved don't mean it ironically, and then it becomes just really sad.
Sad and funny at the same time.
Honestly, after watching that documentary, because my girlfriend was watching it, I was like, let's just hang in there and see if I like it. And after finishing the episodes, I really sent him a message on Instagram.
Okay.
I don't know the dude. I've never listened to his music except for what's the hit he's got.
Who? His dad. He has his dad as a hit.
No, but he also has
life. Alsof de laatste dag is.
That's a nice song.
I like it.
Yeah, exactly. So after watching that documentary, I really sent him a message on Instagram, like saying, dude, if you want to ever talk, feel free to reach out. You probably don't know me. I don't know you, but I feel like maybe I can help. Feel free to reach out. Never got a response, obviously. But I was intrigued by the documentary.
You know which one I liked? Which is might be
Michael Jordan.
Yes.
Yeah, that's sick.
I love that one. Yeah. And I thought that was a really cool. I love his whole approaching of.
Do you still have him on your door?
No, don't have him on my door anymore. But yeah, people I kind of admire for some parts. Michael Jordan, Elon Musk for some time. Gotta say, he's kind of, yeah, but still, he's a freaking genius with the marketing. I don't know if he even believes the shit he's saying, but everybody's writing about it. His marketing budget is, you know, $44 billion because he bought Twitter, but still, it's a bargain. And then I really like the Mercedes guy, Toto Wolff.
Yeah.
You look a bit like him.
Yeah, he's a bit more muscular. But yeah, who knows? In 10 years,
he's a beast. He's big.
Did you guys see the Kanye West documentary? Yay.
No.
I'm so not interested in that guy. I can't help it. I actually liked his music when he still worked a lot with Jay-Z and stuff. But I mean, the shit he says.
Well, it's just it's great to see his whole story and to understand where he comes from, and at the same time understand why the songs are written, the stories behind it, and that really gave me a deeper insight into his creative process and his personality. And aside from the fact that he might be weird sometimes and super extravagant or whatever, but. I really like the documentary.
What I like about the Michael Jordan documentary, it's like, it's just kind of a documentary like, hey, this is how it went. This is what was said. This is what I did. You form your opinion on him by yourself a little bit. It's not so much pushed in your face. Mm-hmm. Like, of course, it's a bit romanticized here and there, but I just... Mm-hmm. I just think with his case, he's a very interesting character. And I think if I compare it to Kanye West, I just respect athletes way more than Kanye, because the athletes are actually like, there's a part of the grind they went through you will never see before they were famous or big or successful. And even
kind of
during.
The same for artists as well.
Yeah,
right?
It's the exact same. If you look at the documentary, like he goes through like an insane amount of grinding before he gets famous.
Yeah, but he's just so full of shit. I don't know.
But that's a great thing. It's all on tape. A guy followed him 10 years ago, 20 years ago, started taping stuff. So it's all on tape. Like him visiting the label for the first time, rapping for like the secretary. Because no one knew who he was. Like, all those things.
Yeah, maybe I just think... Maybe I just don't like Kanye and I do like Michael Jordan. And that's why
the thing. You have an opinion of him because of the shit he said or supposedly said. Sometimes might not even be true. But that's also what withholds me to even watch a documentary about him. But I do like his... He's really creative and I really like a lot of his songs. And sometimes I didn't even know they were his, and I was listening to it, full time, which is not actually full time because then I would get fed up with it, but a lot.
if you think about those documentaries, so Michael Jordan, Dr. Dre, whatever, like, is there a pattern you see with successful people, and maybe a pattern that you notice that you recognize in yourself?
They all have luck.
Luck, but also keep going. I think keep going is the one thing that,
and I think the most important thing is vision. I think that's the most important one. It's like those three: vision. How do you call it? Being persistent. And luck. Yeah, you need a good healthy doses of luck.
But how would you describe luck? Like what's lucky about your career?
My career? Oh, I can tell you right away. We were doing Big Room and Big Room went sky high. Yeah, we were just in the right wave. Because we liked it also, but who knew that thing would blow up?
Yeah, okay, but if that was the only thing...
That was not the only thing.
No, I think it's a matter of like, okay, you can be lucky, but you put yourself in a position to be lucky.
Everything you do amounts to be, it's the increasing of the chance of luck.
Yeah. Exactly.
So yes, there you do have some control over it, but also you just need dumb luck also. But yeah, if you don't work hard, don't put in the hours, don't have vision whatsoever, the chances of luck happening, yeah, they decrease drastically.
Yeah. I think that's why like being persistent is so important, because like all around you is always opportunity. Like someone reaches out, and this could be like some producer in the other side of the country, like before I started, for example. And then, oh, well, I don't know. Well, I'll just go and I'll see, you know, maybe something good happens out of it. And I did that a lot with a lot of producers and just kept doing that. And then all of a sudden, one of those producers is Martin Garrix, which is then very lucky that he's right in this period where he's about to blow up. But if I didn't go to all those unknown guys and just talk to all those guys online and just keep showing up, then I would never have met Martin Garrix. Or if I was like, oh no, this guy is too small.
You would have met him eventually. But funny thing is, because also for me, yeah, Martin Garrix, me and Jopke actually know each other through Martin Garrix. He introduced us to each other. Because that's when we went to, oh no, maybe first at Ace thing.
Agency.
I'm not sure if I met you up until we went to Isle of Techno where Martin had to play.
No, we went to the Ace Christmas Bowl in Amsterdam.
Okay.
Because I still live with my parents. And then you said, hey, I live in whatever, Waalwijk, I think at the time. And I lived in Drunen. And you were like, hey,
I remember Martijn said, oh no, you come to there. And also Jopke lives nearby in
Drunen. Yeah.
But why was he playing at Isle of Techno?
Yeah, because he was.
It was a bit later, I think. It was a bit later, and Dylan Francis was there as well.
Yeah, was it Isle of Techno?
Yeah,
actually,
it was.
Carnage there.
Yeah, they have some weird choices with lineups.
Seems like a weird lineup for that name.
It was a weird time as well, because everything like Big Room was blowing up so much. And, you know, everybody jumps on the bandwagon in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And, also they had like a stage full of just EDM guys. Because we were watching Carnage play. Dylan Francis was there. I know him from there as well.
Yeah.
And I don't know who else. It was actually a fun night.
It was very fun.
I couldn't drink, though. I had to drive.
Still back in fun. The days when you guys still partied.
Yeah, back in the days. We still partied. We still party sometimes.
But yeah, it's I think being persistent and keep going is like one of the things people overlook when it comes to being successful. I definitely agree, you definitely need a big amount of luck. But just like keep going when things are like not seem to go your way, and there's going to be different waves in every career, I think. But like a lot of friends from my high school who also were making music in FL Studio, because that was like everybody just played it as a game, they are so surprised that I still make music in FL Studio. And they're so like, some of them you can kind of sense like, oh, but yeah, they didn't see anything in it, so it didn't work for them, so they just stopped and went to do what you're supposed to do, you know, in society, get a normal job and a house and kids. But I think I just kept going, and I was lucky enough to have that early breakthrough. So then you not only have like you have a lot of time because you're still young,
mm-hmm.
but also the confidence to make it quite early in your career, and that really helps being better. Then it's like athletes, like a football player, when they get scouted. I think this is in the movie Moneyball when they talk about this.
So Brad Pitt,
as a beginning athlete, you need some kind of a luck and some kind of break, some kind of good score or whatever, that you get some confidence, and then you can really exploit your talent.
Mm-hmm.
That also has to do with the luck there. for sure.
That's why it's so hard for artists to maintain motivation in the beginning of their career, because there's no real confirmation coming back.
Yeah, exactly.
As in, you're only putting in a lot of hours and a lot of energy and maybe money, but no one is really confirming that it's making sense or that it's worth the investment, because the recognition only comes like a couple of years later. And until then, you have to keep pushing. Otherwise, you will give up like your friend did in high school.
Yeah.
So that's one of the tough periods for a starting artist to mentally go through, because you're getting drained in a lot of ways and there's no confirmation or appreciation coming back.
Yeah, it's still maybe easy to say for me, but it's still weird because the confirmation or whatsoever, I mean, you have a vision about music, house music, what needs to be played. I mean, the vision doesn't depend on success or not. It's your vision and you, how do you express it? It shouldn't matter if people will follow you or not. So it's like somebody who likes to play football. You will still play football even though you're not going to be in a major team or not.
Yeah, because you like it.
And that's also the thing with making music. That's why it's foremost the first thing, which is important, that you actually need to like what you're doing and don't be focused on the success it brings.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. True.
Although I got to say, it's nice to have some success.
Yeah, true.
You know, yeah.
The funny thing about that word vision, I thought about this once I stopped playing as a DJ. I never felt like I had a vision. I did enjoy making music at that time. And I think that that's what kept me going for let's say 10 years. And as soon as I lost the fun part, as soon as I started experiencing that it was more like a job than it was a hobby to me, then it became undoable for me. Because I had no vision, as in it's not that I was a type of artist where I said, this is what I'm building here. You know,
the thing is about vision, you really need to have it. You need to know where you want to take it, where you want to go, what you want to present and what you want to express. Take, for instance, I mean, I've done it quite a few times now, remodeling a home. If you don't have a mood board, your vision, and you go to a store full of tiles or floors or whatever, and you don't have the vision, you don't have the mood board, you're going to look at all the tiles that are there. You're going to go like, this is too much. I like this. But if you have your vision for the whole house, like every room, how it needs to connect, and you have your mood board, then you can continuously rely on that. It gives you some certainty. Somebody's going to do something. What the fuck?
Honestly, I was just looking for like a clap sample or something, because this is like the first time you actually have a good like metaphor for like a vision, like perfect one. So yeah,
life's like building a house, guys. That's basically it. Remodel a home and you know all the shit about life.
Yeah.
No, but
without any jokes, it's a great metaphor, as in now that you notice it, now that you mentioned it, like I never had a clue of what I was doing. You know, I was just blindly following other people, blindly following trends, being influenced by my manager, being influenced by people around me.
Yeah, but look at all the artists that I saw an artist posting. I'm not going to drop names, although I'd like to sometimes. But he or she or it, I don't know.
Or they, them.
Yes. There was something posted. I'm saying it good, huh? And it was about a couple of years. Look at me, and I've done this in all these years. And then every year came by, and the music just always switched year through year. And I could actually hear what was more, less or more, the leading dance style in that year. I was like, oh yeah, that's when slap bass arrived, and that was when chain smokers got big, and they had this big, and everybody started to do the same. We had what's it called, Diplo and Skrillex, they did
Major Lazer.
No, the other thing, but it also was a trend, and And then I just could notice. And then for me also, it wasn't my favorite artist I was looking at. And I was like, yeah, but what's you, you know? What's the music you like, actually? What if you had to choose?
But very, very important. It's also in the same metaphor, maybe. I think vision is something that you can't always have exact, and you need to just have some kind of feeling of where you want to go, even though you don't have to like specifically make a mood board or whatever. And this is also in a house. If you have to fix something in your house or you want to redesign a room, you just actually have to start, and you'll see you'll make mistakes or you'll fix something and like, hey, I don't like that, or I hang a shelf there and it's ugly, I'll change it. And that way, if you just keep going and not afraid to like destroy your house or the nice painting on the wall you did, and you just, then it's also you find out what your vision is along the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
You know what I mean?
No, but you get to certain roads. Eh? You have to go. You have to choose at some point. Let's stay at the house metaphor because yeah, I like it. Let's say you have a house and your window posts, the stuff that's where your windows are in, they're like 20 years old and they need replacement, but they're not 20 years old everywhere in the house because you have a roof chapel.
A roof chapel?
And I don't know if it's called by that way, but a thing on your roof that enlarges your room. And those what's a cozijn called in English?
This is amazing. Hey, let's
but then you have to decide, okay, I'm not going to redo all the stuff that the windows are in, but I want to go, like, here I actually would like to have aluminium. I'm not sure if I'm saying that right.
Aluminium.
Yeah. But at that point, you need to make the decision, do I want aluminium windows downstairs and then I keep for 10 years more the wooden, or do I stay in the wooden sphere because I have it upstairs? Then you will never change. But it's, I mean, you have to look in the future just a little bit. And
yes,
but it's a really good metaphor. I want to say it's a really good metaphor.
You're kind of butchering your
perfect spot. A lot of people, and I think that goes for everyone, so basically everyone, gets stuck sometimes at those kind of decisions where you're like, oh, but I'm not sure. I kind of want to do the top roof then as well, or maybe I want it wood. And then they just stop because there's a lot of other shit going on in your life in general. So you kind of forget about that. Instead of just, you know what, I'll make this choice right now. I'm not sure, but it's going to be aluminum for the downstairs floor. And then you have that. And then you realize when it's done, like, oh, wait, now I want to do the top floor. But then you have to do, even if you don't know the exact vision yet. I guess that's my point a little bit.
It's
so you can agree or disagree, but...
No, but it's a great one. And I do agree. It's just that I
do
realize,
agree also.
It's just that
you need
realize,
to what? Really make a decision and need to do something. That's true.
Yeah.
You need to keep moving. Stay in motion, because once you paralyze, you just freeze.
You actually froze. Is it my internet maybe? Because I see you guys freezing the whole time.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay, because you're recording it locally, so it's okay that the images for us are getting blurry every now and then. No worries. But you know, in the case of vision, like, I do agree with your metaphor. It's just that for me, I never really thought about it like that when I was getting started.
Mm.
With you, Ralph, we've talked about this before. What I always admired about Basejackers is that the first time I met you, let's say that's 12 years ago, I kind of feel you're still on the same road. You're still on the same goal towards that vision. While for me, I never really had that vision of where do I want to go with my music. And you guys are still making big room music like you did back then.
It has evolved.
It has evolved in sound, in quality, but
definitely
in big lines, it's still the same thing.
It's still the same energy and still the same goal we want to reach. We want to play main stages.
Exactly.
And make sure that, almost everybody will like it and move to it. And although that's not per se the goal, But yeah, that's the vision we have. It's actually we're making shit we actually like to hear, you know.
Yeah.
But also incorporate the new stuff that has some of the bad wagons you just jump upon because you actually like them. I mean, I think, making the trend, but yeah, I'm following some of the trends, and that makes you evolve also in your sound.
I think Ralph, that's also your strength, because when I met you, I had the same like that Joey had. You guys really knew like, oh, we need to talk to that guy, we need to have a collab with him, we need to send it to him. Where I always did more things, way more like, oh, I just do something and then see where it goes. And I think it is become like I've learned to be more like Ralph.
Be like Ralph.
Oh wow, guys, no, this is not going the right way.
To think more like you have to have an idea with, and it doesn't need to be the perfect idea, and that's what we talk about with vision. You need to have some kind of idea what you want to do with something. So if you have a track and it's finished, you can't just let it sit on your computer.
No.
And then just need to make maybe someone will someday pick it up. No, you have to then think, okay, you know what, I have no idea what I'm doing. Well, I'm going to send it to these 10 guys, see what comes out of it, and then just go from there. And good things might happen, and sometimes nothing happens. A lot of times actually nothing happens, but from that you learn, and you also see that if you then contact those 10 people, other stuff will come out of it. So it's
that's
really
definitely
interesting
true.
How then things start rolling on all the sides where you've been pushing.
You know, it's actually interesting also because whenever we finished a batch of tracks, let's say 5, what I always tend to do is make an ideal of how I see it, how it will be released, and maybe where and who can support it. I'm just at for like, okay, if everything goes right, he will play that, and he and she will play this, and I don't know what. And also, actually, how can I reach somebody there? What do I need to do over there? Can I meet that person somewhere in a festival? What time do they play? And can I like incidentally meet them? And because yeah, sometimes it's like that, like, hey, wow, Ralph, you're also here, I like this track, dude.
Now he's stuck.
Am I stuck?
No, you were stuck. That was really funny. Sometimes it's like that, and he went like...
No, but still, and also gives you kind of you can also use it as a mirror. Okay, who am I? What can I do really well? Which parts am I not so well at?
Yep.
Kind of can help you decide, do I need maybe a manager for that or somebody else, a coach?
But where do I need
a booking agency?
Huh? Where did you get this knowledge so early in your career?
Must be in your personality.
I actually finished my master's degree in financial management.
I think that's really a personality trait, I think. Mm-hmm. It's like
you
think about that stuff. You think about, like I said, like I was way more random with like, oh, I'm going to a festival, I'm hanging out with all the DJs. Instead of like maybe more calculated, almost like you said, hey, that guy's playing that time, I can meet him for his after set. I think that's also part of who you are. You know, it's like
it's more structured. Like I think the way how Jay and I did it, it was more like organically, as in based on good feelings, good emotions, and just roll with it. And you feel like the way how you did it feel more strategized to me. Like more thought about. It's
maybe also the upbringing. I don't know. My mother was a hairdresser who started her own business.
Same here.
My dad did a lot of shit in construction and also the financial markets. And yeah, I don't know.
Could be
maybe
personal.
It's just the genes. I don't know what. But yeah, and also yeah, I did finish college. It's kind of. I'm not so fan of universities and all, but maybe it kind of helps making it all more structured, how to approach certain shit.
I think it can definitely help. I'm not sure if it's if it's 100% the reason, but I think it does help in getting more disciplined, structured. Yeah, I think that definitely adds up.
Yeah, must be, because it wasn't easy also, yeah.
Did it help that you were with two, as in that you did this with
definitely,
Marlon?
Yeah, because then you can talk about it. And we had some help of other artists we came across as well. I know in the beginning, Sidney Sampson was pretty important to us. And we had a lot of talks with him and how he approached his affairs. And then along the way, yeah, it also doesn't hurt to just ask, you know. Yeah, just ask, hey, how did you do this? Because everything you're experiencing, somebody else experienced it before you.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, if you meet the right person and just ask, hey, how did that make you feel? Then they talk and they go like, oh yeah, that's actually pretty smart.
Yeah. Or you just watch documentaries. People love talking about themselves. So those questions also can really trigger like a mentory kind of thing.
Yeah, but it is because that's also what I always like about artist coaching. For me, guys like that, also Afrojack helped us quite a bit. In a later stage, Tiesto. It actually is really valuable. That's the word I was looking for. And you can learn of the experiences of other people. And they have different thoughts about it. That's also funny. So the more people you talk about it, the more interesting it gets. Then you find your own way in between. But yeah, we always, me and Marlon, approached it also as a business. Because we always knew when there would be no money, we couldn't do this anymore. And if we want to do this, we want to we committed full. But you also need the money. That's plain and simple. So yeah, there also was this... Yeah, this drive to make it successful and to be able to make enough money to keep it continuating.
That's like another important issue that a lot of artists struggle with, which is like the commercial aspect of things with the creative aspect of things. So the creative part is I'm an artist and this is what I want to make. And the commercial aspect is... But is it possible for me to make money with this? And if so, if not, what should I change or how far am I willing to adapt? That struggle is pretty big.
I think for a lot of artists, it's really important to keep that creative thing you have going on. Keep that creative and keep that like, hey, you like doing it. That's very important. But there needs to come a like kind of a switch. How I always see making music is I make music the way I like, and then I have a bunch of ideas, and then I go through it like, okay, now let's do the like, let's say commercial vision, which can I use for Jay Hardway? And then I'm like, then it's like you have an idea, you need to make it into a track, and then you need to make sure that it gets to the right label and that the label makes it a commercial success, hopefully. And I think that's there's a very big divide for me between being busy creatively and just being like a machine finishing stuff. But to me, that like creative part is kind of, yeah, almost like sacred. I really have to like something I'm working on in order to make it a good idea, you know, or to it doesn't need to be in each other's way, let's say. So I can still have that creative part. And then there's this part where, okay, now, yeah, you want to make money. So you have to turn it into something commercial if you want to make money doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So if you realize that and you just put that apart from being creatively happy, I think those two can coexist.
Well, actually, they don't exclude each other. I mean, what is part of, non-commercial music or commercial music is just as creative, but there's almost also no genre that you cannot be commercial successful in, especially in dance. You can do so much. So I don't actually get the question. Is there a person who says, yeah, well, I actually like to make music that nobody listens to. Well, fine by me. But then also the aspiration is not success. But there's, yeah, everybody, like, there's so many genres and niches in dance, especially, that have their own following, their own, yeah, festival stages, whatsoever. You can be really commercially successful in all of them.
Yeah, yeah.
And, yeah, and creativity in that, yeah, it doesn't exclude each other. Yeah. So sometimes I actually think it's kind of a fail mechanism. Yeah. What? Like, oh, well, no, I don't want to make too much commercial music.
Yeah.
Yeah. Commercial music is just successful music. It's not like pinned down. Okay. I talked about slap bass at some point. It's like the bandwagon. Everybody jumps on slap bass because it's an easier way to get, or doing the remakes. We actually do them also from time to time. And yes, is it cooler to make an original song? Yeah, because you can be a little bit more proud of it because it's all your accomplishment. But also making a cool new remake that can be successful is quite a challenge also.
Mm-hmm.
And just as creative. But okay, I do get the point, but still, yeah, if you make really weird music, there's a market for it.
Yeah, I agree. I think you can
have to be really good in that market.
You can sell anything. You can basically you can sell any idea if you have if you like it, the chances are big that a lot of other people also like it. So, and yeah, maybe not in your city, but maybe in on the other side of the world they will like it.
And you don't need 100,000 people, like 10,000 could be enough.
Yeah, exactly.
I always say you need 500 in every city you want to play and you sell out every venue.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
But it's actually an interesting take that you had, as in every song starts as not commercial, and then when it gets picked up, it suddenly becomes commercial.
Yeah,
as
definitely.
In,
yeah.
If you think about like one of the tracks I think about is Yeah Yeah from D. Ramirez.
Mm-hmm.
Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah, it's like, a cool one.
I remember seeing a documentary of him where he
Body Rocks, his remix.
Exactly, Body Rocks. And I saw a documentary where he was talking about the track where he said, this was never my plan, and I actually don't like the fact that it went so big because now I get invited to play main stages while I don't like to play main stages. I want to play dark clubs, small dark clubs. So him, the fact
that... one thing, just boo-hoo, man. Boo-hoo. Oh, no.
You're tough, but
life.
I get him.
Being invited on every main stage.
No, but you're not the guy you set out to be anymore because the dark stages don't want you anymore because you're commercial,
exactly,
which is pretty short-sighted, to be honest.
Yeah, the underground folks don't want you anymore because you're too commercial and you don't want to play in the commercial stages. So now you're kind of in between... like a victim of your own success, you could say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As in, it's a luxury thing.
Yeah. I think like Fisher is a good example of someone who was doing like, it wasn't too commercial what he was doing. And then he got losing it. Now he's playing all the commercial venues and probably people think he's commercial and all the, yeah, they say they're fans of music and underground, but I don't consider those people real fans. They're a bit like those people who decide what is cool and what isn't. I mean, yeah, I just think that's such a shame for that scene. But I also do understand it because I also like to go to, I don't have the time anymore, but to go to those parties where I don't know the music, because that to me is very interesting. And then when you know, when something becomes a hit and you hear it, it's kind of like, yeah, I just heard this on the radio and like, yeah. So I do also kind of get it. But yeah, that must be difficult. But then again, it's one of those things you can't really always steer where you're going or what's successful. So you also then just have to cherish that. Like if you have a hit like that and you, oh no, it's such a weird take that he's like, oh, I got invited to the main stage. man.
Yeah,
be happy about it.
I get him, and then you need to, yeah, kind of feels like you have to compensate for the fact that you actually made a hit. But also sometimes you set out to make something that's more streaming friendly. To be honest, we just did Wrong or Right, and we set out to make it a friendly remake of the Riddle. And something you can still play because it's usually our last track in the set. But yeah, you get a lot of way harder, like big room techno before it. And but still, yeah, so it's not that it always starts out as non-commercial. Sometimes you kind of take it a bit more the commercial road. That's definitely true.
But what I meant was more like, if you think about it, there is no commercial music, as in every song starts as like an underground thing until it gets picked up. And then suddenly when it's successful, it's commercial.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's also how techno became more commercial, while it has been underground for like 20 years.
Yeah.
And now suddenly everyone in Amsterdam is listening to techno music. So it's there is
but
no
techno also evolved, to be honest. It's not the dark techno it used to be. And
well, there still is. It's just a different genre.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. That's the people who say that's not real techno. Yeah, but I actually liked the movement that was going. And of course, as a lot more people go to techno parties, a lot of the techno artists kind of cater to it. It goes all naturally. Yeah? It's kind of unconscious because you also want people to react. But when, let's call them normies, go to techno festivals and they go in quite some numbers. As an artist also, you kind of, and it goes unconsciously, you kind of cater to it. And I think also that's what made techno a little more, also started to sound more commercial. Actually, why all the big room guys started looking at it, because it at some point the difference between big room and techno, I also was listening to Reinier Zonneveld, and I love his music, but I was like, whoa, it's actually kind of what we do, only faster, and it's the underlayment that's really different, you know, the kicks, how they do it. They have these, and that's what I loved about it, and also do now in a lot of my tracks, the atonal kicks. You cannot really hear tone in them, whereas a big room kick has the big tail, always has tone, and a lot of sub, but the techno kicks don't have it. Actually sparked within me, like, okay, I can make a bootleg out of every track now because I don't need the tonal sub layer. I was like, wow, it actually opened up a whole world to me. So yeah, I like that fact about how music works and how it always goes. Because now, if I look at 2 years ago and now, yeah, the music sounds, yeah, for some parts, really different.
Yeah,
true.
And I think you can sell anything. I think if you make something and you're afraid, oh, is there market for it? Think of how lo-fi hip-hop, well, if you say 5 years ago and someone would be like, I make lo-fi, people would be like, dude, why are you making elevator music? And that guy that started then probably could make millions, you know, of lo-fi playlists that are now like listened to by so many people. But that's also a bit like, don't always look at what's on the market now. And then I think we come back to vision. Don't look on what's on the market now and do that. But you can take it into consideration, have some inspiration from it, but always try to look forward and like follow your own gut. Like, hey, I want to go there. And you can't be like, I want to go there only if it brings me success, because that's just not how it works. You have to just pick that road and then not necessarily hope it will bring you success, but yeah, just have that vision, believe in it, and then success will follow, but maybe not in the financial department, but you know,
and happy
success comes in many forms.
What is success?
Exactly.
Waking up every day and feeling happy, healthy, enjoying life. I think that's happiness overall.
Well, I can tell you it's not the money that brings you success or happiness or whatever.
Yeah, Ralph is loaded but feels like shit. So
it's always rich people who say that. It's always rich
full
people
full
who
on
say
Jeffrey Dahmer. No, but yeah, it's yeah, it needs to make you feel good what you do as well. Yeah.
True.
So I think, wisdom bombs here.
Yeah. For me, the ultimate happiness is like feeling, having the feeling of freedom, as in that the fact that you can schedule your own time, that you can go wherever you want to go at any moment in time. And of course, like the super classic is being healthy. But definitely, in general, those are the two things I really need in order to be happy and successful. And obviously, money is part of that, because money buys you that time. You know, that's what money does. It buys true time. So,
but it also corrupts.
It
people
does. Yeah,
to,
yeah,
to look at crazy, stupid, expensive shit. And
yeah,
no, I think I have this saying: money doesn't change you; it reveals you.
Oh. So
if you're already like a corruptible, if you're a corruptible person, it's gonna come out as soon as you make money. And
it's true.
It's funny because with some people, you do see it when they get successful, or like it's some of the people that you knew before and then after, some of them you see them and you're like, hey, this is the same guy. And with some of them you're like, hey man, was that the act, or is this the act? You know,
yeah,
it's always a bit funny how that works.
It's the cars,
but for me, happiness is if you hit a golf ball so pure. And if you guys maybe don't play golf, but
I do,
it's that's the best feeling in the world. You're so in the moment and you try for weeks and weeks so hard, and then you hit one ball that's perfect. Yeah, that's happiness, man.
You don't need a lot to be happy.
No.
Just a ball and a golf course.
And yeah. How did and for the ones who didn't know, Jopke has a kid now called Noah. How did it change your life?
It made time more of a valuable, let's say. But also it made that you need to like divide your time way better. But it's really how I always see is that it shows you instantly what is important in your life. Because I need to take care of my kid, and I love taking care of my kid, and anything else that's on top of that has to like have value. So if someone calls me for a beer and he says, hey, you want to go for a beer, and I in my gut right away feel if this person is important enough for me to schedule it in. It sounds weird.
You said
but
no,
like,
to me the other time.
Exactly. I was like, not now, Ralph. Not now. No, but it's like you drop things that are not important for you, and you care more about people that are important for you, and your time is just way more valuable. So you just think twice, and you have to think twice because you need to plan everything you do. So if I need to go to the gym, I need to make sure that Noah, my daughter, is taken care of, that my wife is with her or taken care of as well. So it's like that's how I see it, but it definitely changed in that sense, that I don't feel like I'll ever be bored again, which is actually awesome.
Yeah, that's
difficult.
Awesome.
It's intense sometimes.
You don't have the time to be bored again.
Exactly. Yeah.
Hey, but what a good answer.
Exactly.
Next time we do Joey.
Yeah. Not for me, like, not much really changed, you know. Like, for those who don't know, I got my second kid about a year ago. Kind of at the same timing as you, Ralph. You were a few months ahead of me.
Yeah. For me, it was February.
February
2022.
Yeah, for me it was July. But nothing much really changed, as in it's more like the planning part, which you mentioned, has become a bit more intense, because now you have two kids to take care of and to schedule, take to the daycare, to school, those type of things. But aside from that, like, yeah, the part of focusing on your kids and that time has become more relevant and valuable is definitely still true. And the only thing I really try to keep in the back of my mind is you need to take care of yourself first, as in if you feel like shit, if you're tired, no one else in the family or around you you won't be valuable to them if you're not in a great place. So you need to take care of yourself first. So that's my focus, as in I want to work out. I want to have a time off with friends, travel alone or with friends. I want to have time off with my girlfriend, so without the kids. And in that place, if I do those things and keep doing those things, I can be the best dad as I can be. And as soon as I start slacking on those things and I'm being at home too much, then I start noticing like I'm becoming this grumpy dad, you know? So one focus point for me is myself. As how do you say it? Arrogant or
egoistic?
Yeah, egoistic. Yeah. As that may sound, I still do believe that that's super important.
I think you have to really fight for yourself, in a way, because you have to make time for yourself, and that sometimes can be a bit of a, at least for me, can be a bit of a discussion. When you just like, I need to work out for my health, but you need to plan it around your life as a family, and that can be difficult. But that's where you really need to, like you said, you don't want to be slacking on that, because then everything starts crumbling in. So, but yeah, I think it also has takes some sacrifice in some fun stuff you want to do, and sometimes you have to be like, oh, that's really going to be not handy in my schedule, or I need to work around it. But that's also some sacrifice you really have to make sometimes, and that needs to be balanced, I think, between the parents. And you have to really talk about those kind of things a lot.
Good communication is key.
Yeah,
it's super hard, but it's key. And one of the best old cliches is a good partner is the best life hack you can have. As in, the girl that you're with is super important in what type of life you have together.
Happy wife, happy life.
Exactly. Yeah. Let's put that on a towel and go back to the...
We don't need that book.
No, we don't need it. We can write it.
Yeah.
Guys, we're into an hour now. I think people are tired of our bullshit.
I think they're just trying to get interesting.
Long gone. If you made it this far, yeah,
you'll get a free I Love BJ's t-shirt. Make sure to email me at info@basecheckers.com and do in the, is it called a caption or the subject?
Subject.
Please write artist coaching loves BJ's.
That's a good call.
We only have XL, so either eat a lot of hamburgers and you'll fit in automatically.
Or work out a lot. Hey,
yeah,
like closet.
Just use it as a tent.
Yeah, exactly. Or like a cloth, whatever.
Well, we have quite some left, so I'll see you all. There's no, 10, 20. We don't care.
Cool.
Okay. I'm really curious if I will.
And we're still looking for sponsors. So if anybody wants to sponsor us and to share our knowledge,
protein bars
or like this this drink from Camelback, guys, come on.
Camelback, they used to be like this bag with like a
who makes these awesome glasses?
Probably China. did you know that those are not glasses, but it's actually a candle thing? You can put a vaccine light in there
or something.
Yeah, it's not meant to be a drinking glass?
No, it's actually for Horeca tables and put like a lighter in there.
No, it's a cocktail glass.
Yeah.
I always thought it was for whiskey and kind of like...
Yeah, they're sold like that, but it's not.
Well, they feel like really cool.
Yeah.
Makes me really feeling masculine.
Sophisticated.
Yeah.
Okay, guys, we're closing off. Let's Adios. Do this again next month.
Yes.
And we'll pick things. Let's think about what other topics to discuss.
You can also send them in the email.
Yeah.
Topics.
Yeah.
Topics.
Or just send the fans an email instead of doing this podcast.
Ralph doesn't have socials.
Bye, guys.
Bye, guys.
Bye.